The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show here on 100.2 FM, 95.1 FM, Freeview 277, online at bizradio.co.uk. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin.
Hello. I just tried the chocolates.
Oh, yeah.
They are delicious. I'm on a 90-day sugar-free protocol.
That's not working, is it?
I've been really good for a whole... But who could resist? I'll just extend my 90 days to 93, and it works then, isn't it?
This is going to make me laugh. The day before yesterday, I started an intermittent feast. Fasting
or
diet.
Intermittent feasting would be great, wouldn't it?
Intermittent fasting diet, which worked really well for day one because I was 22 hours in A&E without anything to eat, which was pretty good. But all that means is today I'm starving.
Yeah, well, in Ashford, they're so used to keeping you there. They bring a trolley round every 6 hours.
Yeah.
And I did nothing but eat sandwiches and tea and coffee when I was there. And I don't normally eat a lot of gluten, as you know. And when I came out, my stomach was like a barrage balloon, whatever that is.
A barrage balloon's like your stomach.
Yeah.
You've eaten a lot of gluten.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I had tuna sandwiches like about five.
Right.
It was, money no object for the NHS. But what I was going to say was that the Terra Firma landscapers, they're gone now. We quite miss them. So it's just you, me, Tony.
Very intimate. Yeah, the boys had to rush off because they got a hole to dig somewhere.
Yeah. And they're going to come round to Whitstable. I've invited them.
All right, cool.
Who wouldn't?
Yeah, absolutely.
Those muscles.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll try and send my husband off to London or something.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. No, they're really good. And we got a lot of feedback on Twitter already about the interview with the guys. So well done to Luke and Adam. We're going to talk to Tony in a minute.
Yes. Well, Tony sent us a lovely email and I forwarded it to Dan, my lovely architect. Mm. And I said, you need to keep Tony on your books and in your radar and perhaps meet up. So I sent that this morning and I've got a feeling I might have to drag Tony around to look at my plans, or I might email him my plans and see what he thinks.
Be careful, Tony. Be very careful here. Don't get sucked into her little universe.
Well, when a man brings chocolates, what's a girl to
do?
He's in. Exactly.
Yeah.
He's very thoughtful.
We're going to read a couple of emails and then we're going to talk to Tony.
Okay.
What you got?
So we got a Careers 3030 event. These are really, really popular, and you're invited to inspire and prepare students at Canterbury Christchurch Uni for the world of work. And it is Wednesday, the 21st of February, 3 o'clock to 5 p.m. It's Canterbury Christchurch, as I said, the Uni, St Augustine's House, and you're invited. They have up to about 30 people from industry and voluntary sector to engage directly with students through a facilitated speed networking and employability workshop. It's very hard to read when you've had lots of chocolates.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a biggie. This is my event, and it's a biggie, this one. We've got 80 students. 80.
Excellent.
Taking part, and I've already had 35 businesses sign up. So
that's brilliant. What age are the students? 18 plus?
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of them are actually older than that because they're nearing the end of their degrees, and some of them are even doing masters and PhDs.
So you've got Munya Badze.
Munya Badze is organising it.
He's great. So Munya.Badze, B-A-D-Z-E at nhs.net you can do him, or you can email hello@bizradio.co.uk. That's an email you all know.
Yep.
And the networking session will help students build their confidence, giving them experience to develop conversations in a safe environment and enable them to meet a wide range of people from varying business environments. So who have you got going? Do you know yet?
Sorry?
Who have you got going from businesses? Do you know yet?
I know quite a few of them. Zeenat Narani's going. Sarah Marsh Collins is going. Linda Garcia is going. James Gardner is going. How many do you want? We've got 35.
It's good to know.
Yeah. Gemma Fairclough-Haynes is going.
And what are the students studying at uni?
A range of things.
Okay, from... Yeah. Give us a clue.
Well, business, MBAs, engineering.
Brilliant.
Nursing.
Brilliant. So really wide range.
A eclectic range.
Well, Tony needs to go along.
Well, he's not a student.
No, he's very facetious, Tony. Yeah, and the boys from Terra Firma, they'd be good.
Yeah, so that one's going well. I'll tell you what, the next day I've got another one.
And what's that?
It's a slightly different 30-30 that I'm holding at Ironworks in Sheerness in the morning.
That'd be good.
10 till 12:30.
That'd be good.
That one is, we've got 30 young people aged 16 to 24 who are currently not in employment or training. They're what are classically known as NEETs.
Mm.
And then we're doing it in conjunction with Ashford College, so we've got some college students as well. And I'm looking for 20 businesses to participate in that.
And what's the day?
It's the day after.
Okay.
So it's the 22nd of February.
Yeah, that's a Thursday. And yeah. Same time?
No, it's 10 a.m. till 12:30.
Okay.
The Island Works Sheerness, Dockyard okay. Church.
Good. Over the bridge. Look, who sent me all these emails email for radio? Just if you are sending us any work, needs to be succinct.
Would you like to know how much I edited that? That was 3 pages when I got it. I got it down to 1 page without losing the context.
I might put it to the end and hope we run out of time.
Well, I tell you what, should we talk to Tony?
He'll
give you time to cogitate on that and organise your brain around that.
Yeah.
It's an absolute pleasure to welcome back onto the show Mr. Tony Cheeseman of IQ Property Services. Tony, thank you so much for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you on the show. We were so thrilled when you were on last time, and you were so eloquent and so informative that so many of our listeners asked to hear more from you. So it was a pleasure to invite you back. So thank you for coming.
Thank you very much, Paul. It's a pleasure to be back.
Company. You know, these kind of things, it's the same with the boys from Terra Firma. They're the kind of things that affect a lot of people, and they're just interested in, you know. And property is a big thing, especially in the UK, where we're a big property-based country, really, aren't we?
It's everybody's biggest asset, most probably, isn't it? Yeah. People who own property.
Yeah.
And so it needs to be taken care of very carefully.
Yeah.
But, you know, what was great about the guys from Terra Firma, Adam, I just noted down a few things they said, and Adam said that for him it was always important to get it right for the client.
Mm.
Yeah. Lovely.
And then he went on to say, we just ask the client, what is it you want, and how can we make that happen for you?
Yeah.
This is just so important, and this just buys directly into our philosophy of, you know, the person that this all has to be about is the client.
Yeah.
Why we say at the beginning of any project, you need to be sitting down with the client, developing a wish list that you can look back on at the end of the project and say, have we fulfilled all your wishes?
Yeah.
That's what we should...
Nobody has ever said that to me, not even my husband.
am I everything you desired? Yeah, no.
Particularly not a construction or builder.
But that's very true, Tony. It's incredibly true. I'll tell you what, for those that didn't hear last time you were on, just give a quick overview of Tony and IQ Property Services and what it is you do.
Okay, so IQ Property Services are a construction project management company. Mm. How did we get here is rather important, most probably, because I was initially trained in electrical engineering and had an electrical contracting business that was developed into an electrical and mechanical contracting business. So that was doing electrical installation, heating, ventilating, air conditioning.
Mm.
And it developed quite quickly. I mean, I started my business when I was 20 years of age, and I'm now 70 years of age. So I've been in this industry for an awful long time.
50 years, in fact.
50 years this year. This year, I celebrated this year 50 years of being in business and also 50th wedding anniversary.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it was all at the same time.
Congratulations.
But you know, I've seen an awful lot over that time, effectively. And the initial business we started grew quite quickly. It became a multi-million pound construction turnover business doing mechanical and electrical works. And we was running very large projects, and a lot of them in London for the banking industry. And then we started working on very high-end houses. And what became apparent to me was, not all of them, but how many of them were poorly managed.
Right.
And on the back of that, we actually started our own project management company, because we'd realised that we'd almost moved away from this engineering processes that we'd started, and we'd become much more managers of projects.
Mm.
In the intervening years, I disappeared back to university and done an MBA in SMEs.
Well, he's an overachiever, really, isn't he?
I know. An MBA in SMEs.
So small to medium enterprises.
Yeah.
Okay. And of course, in the construction industry, the majority of businesses in the construction industries are SMEs.
Yeah.
And if you think about a building project, when you are starting a building project, you are actually starting up a small business for a period of time. But you're not actually going to keep that business running. You're going to start it up, and then you're actually going to have to go through the process of closing it down again.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay? Yeah.
Which is just as difficult as starting it up. So for us, when we look at construction projects now, especially for clients that we're working on with high-end houses, we look at this as if we're starting a business, we're running that business for the duration of the project, and then we're closing it down. So what's the most important element of that that you need to get right, whether it's a business or whether it's a building project? It's the team that you put together. If you can put the right team together and have the right people with the right commitment and the right focus, you will get a good project at the end of the day. And the client will say, do you know what? You've hit my wish list.
Wow.
And guys, like we've just heard from, the guys from Terra Firma, inbuilt into their philosophy, in their DNA, is already that commitment.
Yeah.
You know, these are the types of companies that we look to work with and bring onto our projects. And for us, this whole process of building the team is what we're focusing on at the moment. We've sort of started a little bit of a mission going, because we've had a number of calls recently from clients partway through their projects, and it's not going well. It's running over budget. It's running over time. It's not hitting the client's targets.
And who have they got running it usually? Is it the builders just doing it, or do they have a...
Well, sometimes that, you know, they're very... It's not all that common, I've got to say, to have a project manager, you know, and this is what we want to make more common, because people don't realise the importance of having somebody taking an umbrella view of their project.
Getting everything done
in the right sequence, the right people, the right time.
I think that's a really, really the most important point that you're making with domestic projects. There's a million stories out there of people that have got builders in to do things, and the whole thing goes completely wrong because you get all this nonsense about, you know, the electrician doesn't turn up before the plasterer, and, you know, the plumber comes when you've just finished decorating, and then they get halfway through the job and then it stops because they're waiting for the dry liner to come, but he's on another job, and because there's no project management behind the whole thing, it's a bit ramshackle.
Well, a lot of clients will believe maybe they can project manage
themselves. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
they've watched the TV programs.
Yeah, it's easy, isn't it? It's easy when you do that way.
Detail.
But
you know, it starts earlier than this. Really, you when you first start your design, you need a set of architectural plans. So you may, you know, you'll go off and find yourself an architect. But you need to understand what it is the architect's going to provide for you.
Yeah.
And if you don't know what you don't know the questions.
Absolutely,
to ask.
Yeah.
So we like to feel that if we can get involved early with a client, we can guide them along this path. We can let them know what they don't know.
Yeah.
We can make sure they ask the right questions of the right people at the right times. Or we can manage the whole process for them. So some of our clients will employ us just to manage it from start to finish, give them the keys, they move into the house. Other clients may just want some support as we move along the road. But we've started a particular mission just this month where we're saying to people, if you've got a building project and you're thinking about running it, or you're thinking about starting this project soon, give us a call. We will talk to you free of charge between the whole of February and the whole of March. Anyone phones us up for advice, we'll happily meet them, Zoom them, telephone conference them. There'll be no charge for the advice, and we'll listen to where their project is and is it starting off on the right road.
Right.
Because if it doesn't start off right, they will have problems later on.
Absolutely. You also get this thing, this happened to me many, many, many years ago, where I started doing something, and I kind of had a vague thought in my mind about what it was I wanted. And I tried to articulate that to the architect, who went, yeah, got that. But he came up with a design which wasn't remotely what I had in mind in the first place. It wasn't that it was bad, yeah, it just wasn't what I had in mind in the first place. He then spent most of the time trying to convince me his idea was better than mine, which it may well have been, but I think that's the root cause of a lot of the issues that you've highlighted there, Tony, isn't it? That, you know, people need to think it through.
You've touched on something quite well, Paul, really, because it... you know, I have a lot of sympathy for architects because they're trying to take the brief from a client.
Yeah.
And they need to understand that brief and try and develop for the client what their wishes are.
Yeah. We paid for an architect, Tony, and it just wasn't quite right. And when we questioned it, he got very uppity. So we had to pay for a whole new design, which is great. And, you know, and we really get on well with Dan, who I've put you in touch with. But it's that communication right from the very beginning.
It's all about communication. And that's why we're saying to clients, come and talk to us. Mm. We will tell you the questions to ask and what you need to understand. Mm. I mean, the architects generally, if they're RIBA architects, they will work on what they call their seven steps. So they will do a fee proposal up to an RIBA stage 3 or an RIBA stage 4. But you need to understand what that gives you.
Well, it is, yeah.
And, you know, they're all in a competitive world. They're bidding competitively. They don't want to lose the project to someone else who might be offering more services, but the client needs to understand what is it they've bought.
Hmm.
Are you comparing apples with apples when you're looking at different architectural practices?
Yeah.
And also, you need to get on with these people.
Yeah, absolutely.
They need to
be
people that you're going to be married to them for 12 months of your project.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You need to get on with these people.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
that
as much as we spoke about the team earlier, you need to know that everybody on that team has got the client's best interests at heart, and you're all moving in the same direction.
Yeah. What would you say about the cost of materials? Is it going down, or is it just still staying astronomically high as it did during the lockdown period?
I think the cost of materials has started to stabilise.
Where
we've seen the major increases has been in labour. So labour went up considerably post-Brexit. Labour went up. And then through the pandemic, labour went up. And we've not seen that any labour costs come down. But materials are beginning to stabilise. And material prices spiked, and I think they've come back down.
Yeah. And shortages? Is that getting better?
It's getting better. We're not seeing so many shortages as we did have before.
Mm. Yeah. Because at one point in the last couple of years, the cost of timber went through the roof, didn't it?
And glass.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Glass, timber.
And I just, because I happened to notice the other day that timber started to stabilise in price a lot more than it had been before. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're past the worst of the not quite knowing how much it was going to cost you at the buy materials stage.
Yeah.
And of course, this is important for contractors because contractors will be bidding for a project that may be going on for 12 months.
Yeah.
They have to have some idea, some surety of prices. Coming back to the clients, you know, I mean, the first thing that a client needs to understand is what is it they want to build.
Yeah.
They may get some drawings produced, early drawings produced by their architect, but they should be sitting down with those drawings and then looking at them in detail and saying, is this the house I want?
Mm.
We always say to them, furnish the house first.
Mentally?
Mentally. Once you've got your drawings, imagine you're now going to live in that house, how you're going to put your kitchen into it, how you're going to put your furniture into it, because sometimes that alters the situation of how the architect might draw it.
Yeah.
So you might need to go back to the architect to get some plans amended. So when you're negotiating with the architect, you need to make sure that you're clear to the architect that you will need to look at these plans, digest them, do they work for me, and has the architect allowed within his fee proposals for a number of reiterations of these drawings before you get it right. A lot of architects these days will now be able to do 3D modeling, so we normally would always advise that a client has a 3D model built.
Right.
Because it's difficult for clients to understand 2D drawings.
Yeah, sure.
Right? Yeah. But a 3D model, and they're sophisticated enough now for you to be able to walk through them.
Yeah, yeah.
A 3D model where you can walk around, you can look at the house, you've been able to put some furniture into it. You start to get a feel of the house. Yeah. Is it right for me?
Yeah, yeah.
So this process, this upfront process where you might go, through your drawing stage, your planning stage, your rethinking about it and coming back to it again is so important before you get your contractors on site.
Cool.
And then also, of course, you need to say, how am I going to engage my contractors? Please don't engage them by saying, I'll pay you 25% up front and then you come and do the work. There are plenty of good contracts in the marketplace that you can use, JCT or homeowner contracts, depending on the size of the project, that you can put in place between you and your contractor. And even, you know, if we were running a project, we would become the contract administrators for the project. So we would administrate it all. Would there be a contract in place between the client and the contractor? And that's what's used to administrate the contract.
I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, and I could quite easily be wrong. But I'm thinking primarily about small domestic projects, personal houses and what have you. I still think that an awful lot of people kind of go at it haphazard and go, do you know what? I want to build an extension. What do I need? Okay, I need an architect to design the extension. And then I need planning permission. So they kind of chip away at it, which is why they tend to end up with something that they didn't want when they first started. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely correct, Paul. And that's why we're saying, come and talk to us first. And we try and put you on the straight and narrow.
Yeah.
I mean, the majority of projects we deal with are multi-million pound new build homes.
Right, okay. Right?
Or, you know, million pound plus new build.
Well, that's the dream. Starting from scratch, in my opinion, is just so much easier. I'm trying to do up a house which is, I don't know, 60 years old, and we've been in it for 13 years. And that's, for me, that's really hard.
Yeah,
it's bitty.
It brings its own complications.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we do large refurbishment projects as well. And we deal with smaller residential properties, and they all have the same principles at their heart. The same practices and procedures will apply to all of them. If it's a smaller extension, you could most probably manage that yourself with some support from companies like us. And we can put you on the right lines.
It's as you said, isn't it? It's giving you like a checklist to start with.
But you're using your own contractors, like plasterers. What are you doing?
We've built up a schedule of contractors that we've known over the years. But we don't necessarily say to a client, you must use these contractors. The clients may have their own contractors. And who are we to say whether they're good or bad?
But we
would talk to them, interview them, understand what their business is like. And then we could advise the client whether they're the right contractors or not. I mean, recently we'd done a project in Sevenoaks, a small extension, where we'd actually built a main house for a client. And this was for a house that his daughter had bought. And they asked us if we would give them some help. So not full-blown project management, but some help along the way. And we suggested a couple of contractors, and they came in with one of their own contractors. And it just happened to be a couple of lads who the husband played football with, initially I was thinking, will this work or not? They clearly wanted to use those as contractors. We put some contracts in place. We discussed with them. We checked their financials out. They've done a fantastic job.
Cool.
They've done a very, very good job.
But that's great because you're checking it all out first for the client.
And we just popped into that site a few times during the build to make sure it was all going well and that they was being paid what they should be paid, that they wasn't overclaiming on their valuations, so the client wasn't at risk financially. And that worked very well. And those two guys, small business, and they're on our list. We would recommend them.
Yeah. Great.
But this is how we get our companies. We've met Terra Firma today, and I'm thinking, well, they're a good company.
Yeah.
You'd like to see them.
We could work
list.
With them. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's how we get them. That's how we can then recommend them to clients.
Mm.
But, you know, it's an industry I love.
Yeah.
I've been in it all my life. I must love it.
We can tell from your power. I mean, and not only are you vastly knowledgeable in it, but you're passionate about it too. And that's always a great thing.
It occurred to me the other day, I thought, why am I still doing this? And I thought, well, I must just love doing it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And I love finding the right people for the project.
Yeah.
And I love seeing the client satisfied at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And I think if you still want to see that, then you might as well carry on giving people the knowledge that you've got.
Absolutely. if you don't mind, I want to ask you a few questions just because they fascinate me as much as anything else in terms of the process of doing this. You mentioned that a lot of the work you do is new build houses. Do they tend to be one-off, so somebody's building a house for themselves, or do they tend to be small developments?
No, they tend to be one-off, so it's where a client would be building for themselves.
Yeah. So bespoke.
Bespoke. Mm. And the majority of the time, the client would have bought a property on a plot that would be knocked down and rebuilt.
Yeah. Well, that was one of my first questions. There's no ulterior motive here at all. Let me tell you this. Possibly. If you buy a property with the intention of thinking, I'm going to demolish that and build something better, how easy is that to do in terms of the planning regulations and everything like that?
Okay, so from our point of view, we work with some very good planning consultants.
Yeah.
So if a client is... So now we're going back even before the times if they've spoken to their architect.
Yeah.
You know, if in their head they have this seed of, I'd like to buy a house in a nice location, I'd like to knock it down and build myself a new, you know, fully functional, up-to-date, energy-efficient property.
Yeah.
You need to take some planning advice early on.
Right.
Because our planning consultants would look at the property you're considering, they would do some research, and they would give you a good assessment on whether or not you will get planning permission to knock that down and rebuild.
Yeah.
Okay. And I would say that 99% of the time, if our consultants look at it and give advice on it, they're correct.
Okay. Yeah. Is there a rule of thumb in there anywhere? So, you know, I don't know. If it's a 1960s property, they're perfectly prepared to bulldoze it. If it's Victorian, not quite so much.
Well, listen, if it's listed, you're not going to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay?
Yeah.
So if it's a listed property, forget about it. Yeah. You're not going to do it.
Yeah.
But if it's not a listed property... And it's not particularly energy efficient, and it needs refurbishing, then the chances are you'll be able to knock it down and rebuild.
Right.
Okay. Where I live in Whitstable, they're knocking down loads of bungalows. You know, mostly builders are getting bungalows and turning them into houses. Hardly any bungalows left now. They're all gone.
That's
so.
Right.
Yeah, and I want to do it, so I'm looking at going further afield, maybe to Thanet or somewhere like that now.
And it's the only way to get your plot of land, really. I mean, you know, to try and find a plot of land to build on is quite difficult.
Now.
This is an easier route through that process.
Mm.
And, most certainly, that's certainly a route you can take. But it's not necessarily the least expensive route. I mean, the good thing about knocking down and rebuilding is when you build new, there's no VAT.
Mm.
So with zero rate VAT, if you refurbish, you're going to pay VAT at the standard rate.
So if you knock down a house and rebuild, there's no VAT?
There's no VAT.
What's the reasoning behind that?
Well, it's a quirk, I guess, of how they set the VAT up originally, because on new build houses, there was no VAT. Right, because they didn't want to inflate the price of the house.
Because they want people to build more houses.
People to build more houses. I mean, it always seems strange to me why they haven't got some sort of cut-off element on when you do and when you don't pay VAT.
Yeah.
Because some houses need extensive refurbishment, especially with the old housing stock we've got in the UK.
Hmm.
So some tax breaks on VAT could drive that refurbishment.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you've already got the tax break on new build.
Yeah.
Why not make that tax break apply to major refurbishments?
Major refurbishments, yeah, good point.
Especially with the whole net zero thing, where our house on the seafront has got probably 50-year-old double glazing, which is hopeless.
Yes.
And we hate the windows because it's got leaded lights in. But to change those windows, the cost... I mean, just my blinds were 550 14 years ago, just plain blinds with flock lining. So you can imagine what huge opening windows are going to cost. So
PVC.
Do you know, I've told you when Tony was on, I hate plastic windows. We've had plastic windows.
I hate plastic windows.
Oh, Tony.
You can't beat good tinsel.
No, I regret.
There we are.
If I win the lottery, I'm changing, because we had all PVC windows put in the back and I hate them.
Yeah.
You know, that previously they were wooden, but they were rotting.
Well, see, I've got a Victorian house. Well, Victorian.
And also, hang
house.
On, they let in condensation. Like, the condensation now from when we had wooden is just hideous.
Yeah.
I hate them. Carry on, Paul.
No, I was just going to say, I've got an Edwardian Victorian house, and my window frames are original.
Is it Edwardian or is it Victorian?
1910.
What's that? Is Edwardian?
Edwardian, yeah. Every single window frame in my house is rotting.
Yes.
Yeah. I wouldn't put PVC in, I have to say.
No. And anyway, now, you know, you can get timber windows that are going to last an awful long time, you know. Yeah. And there's a timber called a coir. If you build your windows out of a coir, they most probably last as long as you...
What colour is that?
PVC.
A coir.
Well, I mean, it depends what you do with a frame, doesn't it? But it looks like a sort of an oak colour initially. But you know, I mean, you can treat it for whatever colour you want it to be.
And can you get bespoke windows? Because, like as I said, ours are...
Yeah, of course you can.
Opening.
I mean, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we work with any number of companies that will come and measure your windows and build the windows to fit your openings.
Okay.
You know, I mean, that's standard practice.
Yeah, yeah. Really. Okay, that's good.
So I want to come back to this idea of having demolished a house and building a new one. Mm-hmm. I've got a lot of questions about it, really. I'm trying to work out what the best way to start with them is. The kind of people that are doing this, do they tend to be doing it for their own benefit? You know, so I want a house that suits me.
Yeah, absolutely. They will do it for their own benefit. The majority of them will. There's very few do that and sell the house. And anyway, there's something called a seal charge.
Right.
Okay, when you start to build a new house, the local authority will put on a seal charge. That's called a community infrastructure levy. This levy applies to all developers building houses. Mm. And you would imagine community infrastructure levy. It was originally brought in to enable infrastructure to be put around the developments.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you will pay that unless you are a self-builder.
Right.
And if you are a self-builder, you can apply for an exemption to the seal charge.
Right.
But there are specific elements you must follow. If you don't, it's very, very prescriptive. Right. If you don't follow the prescription all the way, you will lose the ability to get an exemption to the seal charge.
Got it. Yeah.
And will end up getting charged.
Right.
And the seal can be anything up to, it's a percentage of your build costs.
Okay.
It's a percentage of the volume you're adding to what was already there.
Right.
But it could be 30,000-40,000 pounds. So it's significant.
Yeah.
Now, the reason I'm saying about the seal charge is what you've come back to here. You know, do people buy it to sell it as a developer?
Yeah.
If you bought that house and you subsequently sold it for a profit, you're going to pay the seal charge.
Right.
Unless you've lived in it for 3 years.
Yeah. And presumably you pay capital gains tax on it as well.
You pay capital gains tax.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if it's a true self-build, you're going to build it for yourself.
Yeah.
You follow the prescriptive processes of the seal charge, which I won't go into. It's a different subject. But if anyone wants to know, they can give me a call or email me or whatever.
Yeah.
And then at the end of that process, you've got to live in the house for 3 years.
Right.
And then you're deemed to have not have been a developer, and it's just your home.
It was your home. Yeah.
Yeah.
So does that mean you could almost rent it out and pretend you were living in it? Or
No, you can't.
You have to prove that you're living in it.
You are going, because you have to prove as soon as the development is finished that you're in there, you're signed up for rates, you're paying rates, etc. Yeah.
Okay.
If you decide that you're going to build it and it's going to become a buy-to-let, it's a commercial operation. You're entitled to pay the seal charge.
Which is fair enough.
I'm not going to get into the details of this because it's probably sub judice right at the moment, but there is a very special case going on at the moment where one of the 150,000 things that this person is supposed to have done was to do exactly that. They took a property and tried to claim they were living in it, but in fact they were renting it to somebody else, and they were charged with fraud for that.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. I want to ask an even worse question, probably, Tony. I'm sorry about this, but this whole thing, I know nothing about buildings, but like a lot of people, as we said right at the beginning, you know, properties are our biggest asset, and we like homes and houses and stuff like that. In building a new house, I'm making an assumption that the vast majority of the cost is the land. Is that true or not true?
Well, if you talk to developers, I think they say it's one third.
Okay.
In terms of a third for the land, a third for the development, a third for their profit. Although, in reality, one third is not a construction-based profit. I think the profit margin in the construction industry, net, profit margin in the construction industry is something like 3%.
Really?
Yes. Right. It's crazily low.
Right.
So the land, of course, land costs is significant.
Yeah.
But if you're going down the route we've just spoken about, you've actually bought a house on land.
Yeah.
So you're paying that price of the house and the land.
And the land,
you're going to knock it down. Yeah. But the house costs are significant.
Right, okay. Give us a feel for, without the land, what would it cost to build a reasonable size 4-bedroom detached house, do you think?
So what do you call a reasonable size?
Yeah, I know. It's a horrible question. It's a stupid question.
You know, I mean, there are set sizes that you must build. I think, you know, the smallest they can build in this country, is it 37 square metres for a 1-bedroom apartment? Mm. Something like that. I mean, crazy. Crazy size. I mean, a nice 4-bedroom house, 3,000 square foot, 300 square metres, I would say, is a nice house. Yeah. And you can most probably still build a good house for £3,000 a square metre.
£3,000 a square metre.
So work out the maths on that. So
300 square metres, you're just under £1 million, aren't you?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. We just had a house that's built in a road in Tankerton, and it was £1 million build. And it's beautiful, but it's totally out of keeping with the road. It's quite an old road with, you know, it was previously a detached house with an orchard around it. But the lights they've got outside, like these great big column lights, it's just too much in the evening. You go by and it's a house that should be somewhere else, you know, not in little old Tankerton. So I think lighting is really important.
Well, that's quite interesting as well, really, because when you put your planning application in, sometimes they will put conditions on the application about the lighting.
Oh, right. I wish they would.
So the lighting should take account of its effect on the wildlife.
Oh, gosh, yeah. It will confuse the birds, that's for sure.
I know. I've got a personal story about that. I'm in the process of building a commercial for site in Tenterton. We are not allowed to put outside lights in.
Really?
So the car park's in complete darkness because unless we can get bat-friendly lights.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. What's a bat-friendly light?
One that doesn't come on.
Okay.
Well, they will have a shield. Yeah. So the light is projected down, not up.
Yeah.
We've got a solar light with our number of house and name of house on the post, the pillar outside the drive. It's great. It was really cheap and it's got a shield over it. Because we've got bats in our house, in our roof.
It's quite common to get conditions on your external lighting and quite common to have to send to the local authority your landscaping plans and your lighting plans.
Yeah.
So it depends what conditions are put onto the planning permission when it's granted.
I think at the moment in Canterbury, anything goes. It's like, you know, the building.
Yeah.
Including over farms, which is really...
Well, actually, they stopped building in Canterbury for a while, didn't they? Because of Stobmarsh, we had nowhere for the wastewater to go.
I was walking at the weekend at Faversham Estuary, the quay there, Faversham Quay, beautiful walk there, and I saw the beginning of the Graveney solar factory, and it is absolutely huge.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were screaming, you know, why don't they put it on existing houses? All the roofs, all the factories, all the farms, all the houses, the schools. But of course, that doesn't make money, whereas a solar factory is making somebody a lot of money. And it's just it's such an area of wildlife, and it's just desecrating, and it's huge.
On that vein, we're kind of fast running out of time, and but it's so fascinating talking to you, Tony, and you're so knowledgeable about this and interesting about this. Are you finding in the projects that you've been doing for the last couple of years that there is a lot of people being very, very eco-conscious about what they're doing?
Yes. Yeah, almost every project we are now doing will be an energy-efficient property.
Yeah.
It will have solar PV. It may have ground source or air source heat pumps.
Right.
So it's definitely moving in the right direction. But that's the advantage of building new.
Right.
You can put it in.
Absolutely.
Much more difficult if you've got a house like yourself, Paul, and it's an old Edwardian house and you're trying to put air source heat pumps in to run it. it's much more difficult
to
achieve.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So when you're building new, of course, you know, you're, all the modern technology is going in, and they will be eco-friendly homes.
Yeah.
And even to the extent, you know, we're doing one in, at the moment in Sevenoaks, it's got bat boxes built into the house.
Right, okay.
Because at the outset of that, we had to do a bat survey. Yeah. We had to have somebody up on the site for 3 days. Was there any bat activity?
Counting bats.
We found there was bat activity up there. So then the house, when it gets built, gets bat boxes put into it.
Right.
And similarly, the lighting that is going around that property
should be
is taken, taken care of the wildlife.
I think people have got so far away from nature. It's like it's very sad, isn't it? That it's all about how something looks. Well, the concrete. I was thinking about the gardening. A lot of the TV gardening programs, you know, they've got these concrete kitchens and outdoor kitchens, and very, very. We just become very detached from natural. Really, my architect was saying that the houses they're being told to build now for eco. Are passive houses,
yes,
and you
passive house.
Can't open the windows, which is my idea of hell.
Well, yes and no, because what happens is you put a ventilation system inside the house.
Yeah.
Okay. So that ventilation system is drawing air into the house.
Right.
It's treating the air, and then it's distributing the air throughout the property. And it also extracts all of the air from, say, your bathrooms and your kitchen, all the warm air. Mm. It extracts that back up into a box, for want of a better word, that's going to treat
a
that
bat
air.
Box.
A bat box. Yeah. Treat that
keep
air.
A bat swarm.
Send that back into the property.
Yeah.
So you don't want to open the windows because you're going to interfere with that system functioning correctly. Mm. They produce the most wonderful fresh air feel inside the house without you needing to open your windows.
For so does it make a noise?
No.
No hum?
No, not at all. You'll have a nice unit positioned away somewhere in the house. Generally, they're running on a 60 to 100 watt motor, so very, very low energy usage.
And what about cost? So low cost?
Low cost, very low cost. And they, you know, I would advise anybody to put a whole house ventilation system.
Really? It's my idea of hell not to open a window.
Well, but it's not stopping you opening the window. Yeah, it's a nice sunny day, you open the window, of course you're going to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there's no problem opening the window.
Okay.
There is in my house.
It'll fall out.
Yeah, yeah.
Squirrels.
No. Actually, I'm in the middle of you two. I've been going around nailing my windows shut. Yeah.
Why?
Because
so
it's a security risk. I've got huge windows all at ground level. My 5-year-old grandson could get in through them if he want. You know, he could open them.
Yeah.
Yeah. No matter how many security locks you put inside, you can open the windows. So as I replace the windows, I have fixed units put in rather than opening windows.
Mm.
Now I haven't got an air circulation system, but I've got an Edwardian house that leaks like a sieve anyway.
Yeah.
I currently, at the moment, have a hole in my roof.
You've got your own airflow coming.
I have.
It's pretty cold.
Yeah, we were doing some stuff. I had a problem with cluster flies. Yeah, and Kelly from Pest Tech came to sort it out. We opened the roof hatch and we both looked up and you can see the sky. Yeah, from the last storm, some of my ridge tiles have come off and we're both going, that'll be it then.
Yeah. What are cluster flies?
Oh, they're just like blue bottles, but millions of them.
All right, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I'm a fan of having non-opening windows myself.
Well, I'm not.
No, I go with you, Jules. You've got to be able to open the window.
Love it.
On a nice summer's day, there's nothing better than opening the window.
Yeah.
But
I'm known for Mrs. Open Windows.
But that doesn't stop your system working because you're going to close your windows at some point.
Okay, so my architect frightened me here because of the sound of it, but the way you've described it, I think I could do that.
Yeah.
Listen, we're fast running out of time. As always, Tony, it's an absolute pleasure to talk to you. And you're so informative, so passionate about what you do. And it's so interesting. I could keep you here forever picking your brains about everything. And it's just how he flows. You can't throw the bloke, can you? Don't matter what stupid question you ask him, bang, he knows the answer, which is brilliant.
Exactly. I'm going to read out their website.
I was going to say, let's hear
it. It's 3Ws, IQPropertyServices.co.uk. So that's 3Ws, IQPropertyServices.co.uk. And Tony...
.com.
It says on here .co.uk, but okay. Maybe it's both. Have you got anything written?
I can tell you in a second. Hold on.
Let's go through to it. If not, you need to change your Twitter.
It is .com, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well, on your
it
Twitter.
It should be iqpropertyservices.com or iqconsultants.co.uk.
Yeah.
That'll be it.
Okay, so get your Twitter changed.
Yeah.
But also, they can, you said, email you,
yes.
Which is...
Yeah, please, yeah, email me. I mean, you know, as I say, we're running through February and March this offer for anybody. Come and talk to us. It's not going to cost you a penny. And what we'd really say to clients is... If you're going to start doing a project, prioritise early and accurate on your planning, get that sorted, gain an understanding of the processes and procedures you need to run a project, and you know what? Acknowledge what you don't know. You know, acknowledge your unknowns.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what you don't know, so invest some time going and finding out.
Yeah. Shall I read out your email, your personal one, or don't you want that on the radio?
My email for me is tony@iqconsultants.co.uk.
Brilliant.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Tony, thank you so much for that. Absolutely fabulous. Very informative. Very interesting. More power to you, my friend. And we're going to get you back again sometime later in the year to carry on this conversation.
Send in your questions as well.
Absolutely. We've only got 4 minutes left of the show. So for the moment, Tony, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Have you got anything you need to catch up on there, Jules? I've got a couple.
Well, Medway Skills, the first ever Medway Business and Skills Showcase event, takes place on Wednesday the 10th of April at Mid Kent College. And the event will celebrate the best business in Medway with a packaged agenda full of, agenda full of resources and information useful for local business professionals. So they say whether you're starting out or looking to develop your business and skill set. So you can go to businessandskill@medway.gov.uk. If you'd like to showcase your business at the event, they're looking also for businesses to be part of the running order for the showcase if you'd like to be involved. So the day will include informative presentations, interactive discussions with business experts and speakers. There'll be workshops as well on a variety of topics, B2B exhibition, networking opportunities throughout the day, and over 14,000 businesses and an economy worth $5.9 billion. And so that is, as I said, on the 10th of April at Mid Kent College. Get in touch with Mid Kent College and details on kentbusinessradio.co.uk.
Cool. Make your business a winner. The Kent Business Awards is now open for all businesses in Kent and it's free to enter. Over the past 8 years, the Kent Business Awards have become sought after awards for local businesses in Maidstone, Medway, Tunbridge Wells, Ashford and Canterbury and their surrounding areas who've gained promotion and recognition from their local community. So if your organisation has great customer service, has created an outstanding innovation, or perhaps you're a great employer or a successful entrepreneur, whatever your business strengths, you need to shout out about them and make sure potential customers choose you over their competitors. All winners are entered into the Best of Award final to find the best overall business, but each one takes place in a region, so Canterbury region, Ashford region, Maidstone region, Tunbridge Wells region, and then there's an overall winner. And the categories within each of those areas are startup business, micro business, small business, medium business, creative digital or innovative business, customer service, best family business, best construction business. It's a no-brainer, that, isn't it? It's got to be IQ Property Services. Best hospitality, leisure and tourism, best food and drink producer, business woman of the year, and there's AHM, that's All Health Matters Wellbeing Award, which is a new award for this year. So that's All Health Matters Wellbeing Award and the McIntyre Hudson Accountant Sustainable and ESG Business of the Year. All of the details for all of that can be found at businessawardskent.co.uk.
Brilliant. Got anything else to read?
Yep, loads.
Go on then.
There's a Marsh Network, and it's a face-to-face networking meeting for East Sussex, and it's taking place at Pet Village Hall on the 6th of February, 10:30 a.m. until lunchtime, 12 o'clock, and you can book and find out more about it by going to marshnetwork.co.uk.
And Martin Reeves says, great Bee Bunker second interview. I'd love to set up Collector's Buddy as a charity and buy a plot to rebuild a house to fundraise out of. My loft is far too small to go big. So Martin spends a lot of time in his loft. In fact, we had on the show the Greyhound Festival, and they were looking for a plot of land to hold their thing. And the good news is that they're going to Mount Ephraim.
Oh, are they?
For it, yeah. So,
Tunbridge Wells.
Yeah. No, it's near Faversham, Mount Ephraim.
There's a Mount Ephraim in Tunbridge Wells as well.
There's probably lots, but they're going to be there in June, and I'll keep you posted.
Okay. The West Kent Business announces the West Kent Expo 24. We're delighted to announce West Kent will have a business-to-business expo in 2024, taking place on Thursday the 14th of March at the River Centre, Medway Wharf Road, Tunbridge. It will open its doors to welcome businesses of all shapes and sizes from all over West Kent. Up to 50 exhibition stands, workshops and plenty of networking opportunities. This will be the place to showcase and celebrate business across the West Kent area. If you want to know more, contact via email expo@westkentbusiness.com. And for that, you get details of exhibiting and sponsorship. If you want to attend as a delegate, go to their website. Go to the Eventbrite website, westkentexpo24.eventbrite.co.uk.
Brilliant. And the date of Greyfest is actually August, 3rd and 4th of August at Mount Ephraim in near Faversham.
And this one's just for Tony, although I'm sure he knows about it well enough. There's an HMRC webinar on how to apply the VAT reverse charge for construction services. This always makes me smile. How HMRC can decide to make the most complicated VAT for the people that find VAT the hardest to do, which is sole traders in the construction business. Anyway, this webinar provides information about when to apply the VAT reverse charge, how to show the reverse charge on your invoices, what to do if you make a mistake, and you can go to it by going to register.gotowebinar.com. Have you finished?
Yeah, I was just letting you do it all. I've read them all. There's only that great big long one. There's no way I can cram that in. I'd have to gabble.
Right.
Well, there is a Sheppey Business Network that should be mentioned. It's the meeting of the SBN.
Yeah.
What's the SBN?
Sheppey Business Network.
Oh, thank you. Tomorrow, manana, 31st yeah. of January, 5 to 7 p.m. It's at the fabulous Island Works, Dockyard Church, Garrison Road, Sheerness. You can go to hello@islandworks.co.uk for details and to book. So that's manana, 5 to 7 p.m., Island Works, Dockyard Church, Garrison Road, Sheerness.
Absolutely. And a little bit of a warning just to finish on. Motorists are facing disruption in Maidstone as a huge City Fibre project has now begun. So there's temporary traffic lights on the A20 London Road near Queen's Avenue. Drivers are warned to expect delays. The project will be completed in 2027.
No.
Yeah. Watch out for that. Don't go to Maidstone for the next 5 years.
Maybe that's why they're digging up all the roads in Whitstable for high speed or whatever.
There's a lot of fibre being installed in places, yeah.
Vodafone just said we've got 5G.
Anyway, we're at the end of the show. Thank you to everybody that participated, to Luke and Adam from Terra Firma Landscapes, to the wonderful Tony Cheeseman from IQ Property Services, to my glorious co-host. We'll be back with another show next week. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Stay safe, everyone.
Bye-bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.